Hello, Art Supply Posse. It's Kim. I'm delighted to bring you today's guest. I've been following her work for some time, receiving her informative and inspiring emails. And on a whim one day, I thought I'd send her an email and ask if she'd like to join us here in the Posse. I was thrilled when she actually replied with a yes. She has been described as the godmother of craftivism, a term that I absolutely love, by the way. Hello, Betsy Greer. Welcome to the Art Supply Posse.
Hey, Kim. Thanks for having me here.
My absolute pleasure and delight. So let's jump straight in and ask, who is Betsy Greer?
Oh, gosh. I am, I guess, like most of us now, a lot of things. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, you read descriptions of people maybe from years ago and they're like, they were a doctor or, you know, a plumber or whatever. And now everyone's like a multi-hyphenate. Like, I'm a writer and an editor and a speaker and a workshop holder, you know. Yeah. And so I write about how craft and activism work together. Mm-hmm. Now that is kind of going more towards craft as empowerment, mm-hmm. versus like straight up like activism, because I think that we need to feel empowered in order to be activists, mm-hmm. in the various ways that we can be activists. And I came to that through my own journey of healing after trauma and of finding that craft has been a way that people have, and art too has been, have been ways that people have shared their voice when they were maybe scared or unsure or working through some stuff. And so I found my own strength through learning about the stories of how others had found their own strength through craft. So I have spent some time researching that and writing about the ways that people have used craft to elevate their voice.
You actually said something there which you're probably not even aware of, but it sparked a little thought in my mind, which is, well, and I mean, obviously it's on your descriptor on your website for a starters, but the word craft, what does craft, mm-hmm. mean to you? And do you think of craft as in the same way as you think of art, or do you think of art as something different from craft? Because I know this is a question, right. that's probably been around for forever and a day, but I find it, mm-hmm. a fascinating use of the two words, because for me, in many ways, I see kind of like at the top of a triangle, I see art as the descriptor, and then from that, everything falls under it to make the triangle. So, like, I see craft and I see photography and I see writing and I see painting, like, all of that for me all comes under art. But I'm curious to know, what does craft mean to you exactly?
Right. Well, to be honest, craft initially in in the early 2000s, was appealing to me because I took an art class at university and was basically told that I was doing it wrong. Mm-hmm. And it felt really alienating, like the experience of making art.
Yep.
Whereas the experience of, I was an art history minor, of taking art history classes and learning about how people use, express themselves through art. That was like a completely different experience and really liberating. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my gosh, like, these, you know, how these artists are sharing their stories and their trauma and their hard experiences, and they're using it as a form of healing and empowerment and strength. And that was really amazing. And then I had this art class that my teacher was not very great. And he had his good points. He introduced me to the work of Romare Bearden. So I will give him that little check plus on that. Thank you, yeah. for that. So that made me think that like art was something that was really hard to, or to be like an artist was something that was really hard to actually achieve. Mm-hmm. Whereas theoretically I had been really inspired by a lot of people's work.
Yeah.
So I found craft, and I had kind of dabbled through like Girl Scouts, through like different projects and stuff. You know, how to sew on a button, or how to weave a mat, like stuff like that. And what I liked about craft was that it came from a utilitarian root.
Yep.
So in history, if you needed a teapot, it just needed to pour tea. Like, it didn't need to be aesthetically pleasing. And I think that somewhere along the line with art, I got confused that it had to be either aesthetically pleasing to go on a wall, or maybe in some cases anti that.
Yep.
To go against that. Yeah. So it was either one of those two things. It wasn't an inclusive space where you could find community, because I had, you know, also knew some people that were calling themselves artists who weren't very like kind and and inclusive and welcoming. Yeah. And so for a long time I was pretty anti-art. I'm going to be totally honest.
No,
Because it wasn't an inviting space.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like there were people that had it and there were people that didn't. And craft was a space where you could do whatever you wanted, because it just had to fulfill its utilitarian role of a scarf keeping you warm.
Yeah.
And then I found other people that also found that how craft had been seen as like lesser than as art.
Yep.
And they found freedom in that.
Yep.
And expression in that. And then over time, as I made more work, and then sometimes galleries would say, we're going to, you know, do you want to be in this group show or whatever? And then my work started being on walls. And then that was really hard, because it's like, well, is that craft? I may have just said my art started being on walls, because I may have just said it there. But like, it's like, what is it when it goes on a wall? Yeah. Is it craft? Is it art? And that was really kind of like confusing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I finally came to the place where I found a softness in art and community that, you know, that was really nice and kind and good and was all the stuff it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
But when my first introductions to it were, there were gatekeepers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I worked at, like we had like a project in high school where we had to go and work at a, you know, or I guess apprentice or whatever, you know, for a couple of weeks at a local business, and I picked an art gallery. Mm-hmm. And there it was very much like, there are people that are accepted and there are people that are not.
Yeah.
And it was, and that did not feel good at all. And it wasn't until I started seeing craft and making stuff that felt right to me, and it was labeled craft. And people, I've been yelled at at a talk, no less, by someone who was like, I'm an artist, I'm not a crafter. And she got super mad. And it was like,
oh.
I just moved to this new city I was getting yelled at by this woman. And I was like, what? Like, why? And I had didn't really realize how contentious that could be.
Mm.
And at the end of the day, I think there's room for everybody.
Yeah.
And I think that art can be a very inclusive, amazing space, but I think that there are definitely pockets that I find frustrating.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I completely agree. And what I'm wondering is if part of the problem of I would say the majority of people that make art or craft or think of themselves as artists or crafters is we are, because we're happy, content, like because we're nice people, and I know someone's probably going to yell at me for saying this, but like maybe because we are so not silent, but we're not yelling at people and we're not, you know, looking down our noses at people and being, well, we're better than you. So maybe that leaves too much room for the negative people. Do you know what I mean? Like, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, it's just.
Yeah, I mean. Yeah, I also want to say that I saw a space in craft that was really not great for at the very when it started becoming popular again. Like it goes in waves. Yeah. You know, it's popular for 20 years and then it's not for 20 years. And then it is and then it isn't. And so there was this not your grandma's craft thing.
Oh, yes.
Yep. And that was very much of like looked down upon about certain crafts that like your grandma did. Mm-hmm. And like, I was like at first, cause you know, I was in my mid twenties and I was like, yeah, this is different. This is like, I was thinking like, this is like revolutionary. We're young and we craft, which is totally dumb.
Yep.
To be perfectly honest. But that was a long time ago. But I mean, and then later on, we're like, wait a minute, like this is totally devaluing all of the badass. Sorry, I hope I can say that stuff about that that people are doing. You know, like the people that have you know been crafters or whatever over making things. We're making things for their entire family to keep their family warm.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing, and that is so strong. Yep. And so I was like, why are we devaluing these skills by saying that you're not, because my grandmothers are awesome.
Yeah.
And so I thought that craft was, you know, so it does exist, but it exists everywhere. Yeah. It's like the, you know, like big constructs like art and craft are going to be like junior high lunch tables.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're big enough that there's going to be some people that don't want to sit with you, but then other people are going to be like, yeah, come with us. And so there's room for everybody.
Yeah, I think so. So you said you came to craft through trauma, and it sounds like before the craft, you've looked at art, and you know, obviously because of people's words. Oh my goodness! Like people don't realize how much an impact their words can have on other people, and it drives me crazy. Like, you know, that being told that you were doing art wrong, it just, that sort of thing just frustrates me so much. Because also, aside from just how negative it is, it's also not helpful. Like, it's not an explanation of what's not quote unquote right. Like, it's not as if someone sat you down and said, look, if you want to do this style of, you know, painting, for example, you are better off if you approach it this way. It's just when they throw lines out like that, it just, oh, I get so irritated. But
yeah.
But what I'm wondering is, so have you always created, like when you were, you know, obviously most of us as kids, we tend to, you know, colouring books and, you know, stickers and all sorts of things. Have you always done something creative, or is it more sort of, as you know, you hit your 20s or whatever, or got a little bit older? Like what's that experience for you?
Well, I, you know, like I did various craft projects, you know, at summer camp and stuff like that. But I wanted to be a writer and so I wrote a lot and was always like hearing snippets of dialogue that I liked or coming up with story ideas or, you know, trying to figure out that. And I went through different kinds of writing. Like I wrote like poetry and then I wrote short stories. And then my mom likes to bring up that my least supportive English teacher in high school, said it at like a teacher parent meeting that, that I should try like analytic writing, you know, about, and that I would, and then of course, that's kind of what I ended up kind of doing. And of course I think about her all the time because she was not that supportive of me compared to other teachers who were like, yeah, go write about your write poetry. You're, you know, you're awesome. Read your whatever. And so it took me a long time to figure out who my people were and what, because I thought that, oh, well, I'm really into like punk rock and DIY, so maybe I should be a musician and like ride a skateboard. Those were terrible ideas. and those, the people that I was friends with were assholes. I'm going to admit they were giant assholes because I thought that I had to fit some sort of narrative.
Yep.
I didn't think about that I would never really be happy or find my, it wasn't until like someone in one of the groups that I was trying to fit into was like, these aren't your people. And which at the time felt devastating.
Yeah.
But, thinking about it 20 years later,
yeah,
was super kind.
Yes.
Because then I was able to be like, oh my gosh, I don't even like these people. I just thought they were cool. Yeah. They're jerks. Yep. And then I was able to realize that, you know, because I think that with, you know, I do, you know, have a, like a history of trauma going back, you know, well, in my teens and early 20s. And so I was just trying anything to feel anything. And so at some points after that, good things don't always feel good. They feel kind of scary because they're safe. Yeah. And so, and then I started hanging out with people that were really nice and were like, oh, like, did you know about this pattern for craft? And like, let's make marble magnets, which were a huge thing for a while in the early 2000s. And it was like, oh my gosh, these people are so nice. And then I would go to like a knitting circle and everybody was like wanting to, you know, show me how to knit when I didn't know how. And I was like, what have I been doing for the past 15, you know, 10 years hanging out with jerks? And my life changed exponentially. Just because I was nice to myself,
yeah,
and followed what felt nice and kind and good.
Yeah.
And then, which circuitously led me back to, also, you know, being shown, having my work shown at like museums. And I mean, you know, not like, you know, in like various group shows or whatever, and like, and being asked to write things for publications and write books. And then it was like, oh, this is what it's like when you, when you find things that are good and you're meant, and that, you know, and you follow the good versus, you know, yeah, stay in a, yeah, in a hole, yeah, in a very depressed hole.
Yeah, definitely. So, oh, it literally sounds like an awakening of some kind.
Yeah, I mean, that was probably pretty rambly, but like, it was such a life changing thing to choose something that was healthy and good for me.
Yeah, absolutely. So, textiles sort of seems to be your passion, I guess you could say. Why textiles? Like, what is it about that medium that works for you?
They are, what is it? Lots of things. I like that they're portable, mm-hmm, that I can work on them with people. I can work on them by myself.
Mm-hmm.
I unlike other things where you may need lots of equipment, I can do it. I can stitch on a bus, yep, or a train or on someone's porch, mm-hmm, or I like that. And I like that it's, that I was, wearing a scarf that I made years and years and years ago, and someone came up to me and I unfortunately only speak English. I'm very bad in a lot of, I know a little bit of other languages. And so someone started coming up to me and trying to talk to me in Spanish. And I was like, I'm sorry, I don't know what you're saying. And then it turns out that she was ended up kind of miming like knitting.
Oh.
So we were able, and I loved that, even though we weren't speaking, mm-hmm, this or couldn't understand each other, yeah, that she was telling me that she admired what I had made.
Yeah.
And I love that. And I love that that's what I also love about craft, is that like, it's something that we all needed to, you know, in its roots, we all needed clothes. We all needed, mm-hmm, blankets. We all needed quilts. We all needed cups. We all like, so it's in every history.
Yeah.
And that is so beautiful to me, that you can find that. I mean, and that happens in a lot of different things. You know, there's sports that are happening. It happens all over the world. And if you want to be a gardener, you can travel all over the world and see gardens. So I think everybody has their thing. Mm-hmm. And I loved that craft allowed me to look back and see how people had used it hundreds and hundreds of years ago. And I mean, like across the world, and to be a part of a line of makers, not just in my own family, but all over the world. And that was also empowering to know that if I was knitting a a scarf in my house and I was sad or I was happy or whatever emotion I had, someone somewhere, maybe even right then that minute, has also been making and feeling that same thing. Mm-hmm. And that also probably happened many hundreds of years ago. And I liked that I felt a lot more connected to the world and to myself by being placed or placing myself in that long line of creativity.
So with your projects, are you an incredibly disciplined person who goes, okay, right, today my project is I'm going to make knit a scarf, right? And you work until that's done. Or do you have multiples on the go? What sort of crafter are you?
I had to actually stifle a laugh when you said that about incredibly disciplined, because I'm not. I mean, there are periods where I will stitch a lot and then I will sometimes go a long time without. It's been hard for me to do embroidery in the pandemic. And then I realized that it wasn't that the pandemic, it's that I'm 45 and my eyesight is going and I haven't wanted, it's been really hard for me to stitch on the 8 o'clock that I would normally stitch on because I can't see it up close anymore. Yeah. And I think about how like my dad was like, I don't need hearing aids for a really long time. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is the exact same thing. You know, I am not stitching because my ego doesn't want to wear, glasses. Yeah. I mean, glasses on top of my already, you know, or get, you know, bifocals because I already have bad vision. Yeah. And so I will have multiple projects. Yep. I even if I'm not stitching regularly, because I go through kind of periods of like doing a lot and then I'll go through periods of not doing a lot and then I'll pick it back up.
Yep.
But I always have something that I can pick up if for some reason we're not traveling much during the pandemic, but like it's always kind of like if I have any kind of like road trip or any where I'm going to be a passenger or have to wait for, if someone's in surgery or any kind of situation where there's extra time or I need to keep my hands busy, I always have something that I can grab that's on the go. Yeah. And so during the pandemic, I picked up some knitting and I have been thinking about doing some projects based on healing from assault. And so that's kind of a work in progress at the moment that I haven't really talked about. And then I have been recording some conversations with people about their craft practice. I've been doing kind of different things, I guess, during the pandemic. So I always have a lot of things that are in the works. And I wish I was more disciplined. I have ADD. So it's either feast or famine. Like I'm doing lots of things at once, or I'm like, I'm just going to bake for a while or garden or whatever.
And I mean, really, to me, they're art forms too. You know, I bake, I garden. I mean, really, anyone can learn how to do it, of course, just like anything. But I find them therapeutic and I find them enjoyable and relaxing too. So, you know, I think I do the same. Sometimes it's like, no, I'm going to put down whatever it is I'm making and go out into the garden. Sometimes that's just what you need to do.
Yeah, and it's been hard during the pandemic to sometimes sit with my thoughts with my craft, because I haven't been, you know, it's not like, oh, I'm going to go and stitch with a friend or whatever, because we haven't been able to. Yeah. So sometimes it's been hard to stitch and just be alone with my thoughts, because there have been periods, you know, where, you know, at the very beginning we were scared that like, can we touch anything?
Yeah.
So it was like, I just felt exhausted because there were 25 million more decisions during the day.
Yes.
And then on the days when I would pick up my knitting, I would be like, oh my gosh, I feel so much better. And it's like, yes, ding dong, of course you feel better. You've written about this for 20 years. You know that if you pick up your craft, you will feel better. And then, but sometimes, sometimes I don't.
Yeah.
And then I go, oh, that was stupid.
Yeah.
So
I do it too.
Because
it, yeah, I do it too. Yeah. And I'm so glad I'm not the only one. You just, no, I don't need to do that thing that I know it makes me feel better, but I don't need it. And then you do it and you're like, oh, I'm an idiot.
Yeah. You're like, oh, ha, ha, that was, yeah. And then, you're like, that thing that, yeah, like meditation or eating healthy or anything. It's like all these things that I know that are really good for me. And I used to stitch a lot when I traveled. Mm-hmm. And so not traveling, I don't know. And then you look online and then people are like, I've made like 45 blankets during the pandemic. And you're like, oh, good for you.
Yeah, good for you.
But I also think that that when we look at the production of people that have made stuff, like, first of all, like, you know, sometimes I like when you see a painting and it said it took them like 20 years.
Yeah.
Like, you know that they probably didn't look at it every day for 20 years. Maybe they did, but they probably didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so I find that refreshing. And I also find that, that I think that, it's good to take a break if you need it and to not force yourself to do something if you're not feeling it and to not think that you aren't creative anymore.
Yeah.
Because I think we're like, oh my gosh, I'm not doing this one thing that I'm associated with or whatever, or I read about all the time. And then it's like, it's okay if you put it down for a few months.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally fine.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that it's not a part of your identity. It may not be. It may be that you need, it may be a signal that you need to move on to something else, but it also means that you can just take a break and then come back to it when that it'll always be there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not going anywhere unless it's something that like can decay or whatever. It's not going anywhere. So,
right.
You know,
yeah.
So I've been reading and enjoying reading the Dear Textiles emails and then over on the website. Could you share with listeners, because, you know, not everyone will know about the project. Could you share with us about it and how it came to be?
It's one of those projects that, you know, you start a project and you're like, I have an idea. And then you're like, can I tweak it? But I'm going to, so I started getting people's stories about textiles and resilience and strength. And then I think that whenever you have an idea for a project, that it's always good sometimes to throw it on the internet and see kind of what happens. And so I got people's stories and then, and, you know, and I got a bunch of them and then I was like, yay. And then I put them up and then I still have a few more to do. And then, that I've been slow about because I'm like, okay, is this, it's like, where do I want to take this?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that, sometimes the projects are like, oh my gosh, like there is a huge thing to like monetize everything to, turn it into a side hustle or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I realized that not everybody may want to read something in a post. And so then I started thinking, oh, if I could record conversations and share them there, then if you are, may have reading comprehension problems or may travel a lot in the car, like this way you can read them or you can listen to them. And so that's what I've been working on the past few months. But I also then was like, do I want to monetize this? Do I want to, there's like a lot of back and forth and a lot of unknown and a lot of pressure to like, you know, to turn it into something bigger. And then I was like, that's not like my background is DIY punk rock, like, it like, you know, doing something because you like it, not because it's going to make you a ton of money. It doesn't mean that it wouldn't, but and so I really had to think about what I wanted, and so that's what that project is. And there are some stories on there now from different people about how they have used textiles, and they're kind of love letter to textiles. And it was weird to start a project during a pandemic and to be like, yes, this is what we're going to do. And then like, is this what we want to do? So it's, yeah. So it's a work in progress, I guess.
So will it become a podcast?
Yeah.
Is that what you're doing? You're turning it into a podcast and such? Yeah.
Kind of, yeah. Because I went through this whole thing of like, well, I could turn it into like more stories and more, you know, kind of things and turn it into kind of a bigger blog. Yeah. And then I realized that like, I don't have the energy for that. Like, I don't want to sound lazy,
yeah.
But like, but I don't want to be the kind of person who's like, and then I had this many posts a week and then this, like so I want, you know, to maybe write some blog posts from there that I haven't, and to kind of and use it as kind of an experimental space, yeah. I guess.
So yeah, why not?
Sharing some audio, and sharing some blog posts and any letters if I get them,
mm-hmm.
Which I realize that, like, I'm sure I always feel like any millennial that might be hearing this may be like, that sounds so haphazard and ridiculous. Like, you know, because you have to have a streamlined plan. You have to have a plan for, and it's not just millennials, but I feel like every millennial I talk to is like, well, this is my side hustle. This is how much money I'm going to make in the first year. And then I'm like, wait, what? Like, I just, you know, because I grew up with like zines and people, you know, like, that had pressed their own 7 inches and like, and so that is exciting to me about putting ideas out there and finding a community.
Yeah.
And maybe you get some talks out of it. Maybe you get to, you know, meet people like you and be on like a podcast. Like, yeah. That's great. Yeah. Like that is exciting in and of itself. Yeah. Pushing for something to be a viable job. After I looked into it, was like, that just makes me want to throw up.
Yeah.
Because that's a lot of stress.
Yep.
And the joy of doing self-directed projects is that people aren't telling you what you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then if you turn it into a job that has like lots of like that becomes more like people telling you what to do.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And so there's been some trial and error of like, what do I want?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some vision board creation of like, is this, and then realizing, wait, no. And yeah. And I think that, I guess what I want to say about all of that ramble is that I think the creative process can be really messy.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I like that.
Yep.
I like that. You know, I don't need to see something where it's been constantly updated every day for like 7 years or, you know, like I like it when people are trying to figure out what works.
Yep.
And then are pivoting towards what works for them.
I feel like that's because I like that too. Like I love that messiness of a creative project. And I feel like to me, that's more authentic to the art, to the craft, because like I know the more you do a thing, the better you get at it. But gee, there's something to be said for just sitting down and, you know, throwing things against the wall, so to speak, and seeing what sticks. Like, you know, like you can start a project and think it's going to work, and then you suddenly realize it's not what you thought it was going to be, but you turn to something else. And like, I love all that. It feels to me, that feels like real life, because I don't know about you, but my life is not just one linear, perfect, straight line. And
no,
yeah, I like that it's represented way.
And I think that, like, I got stuck in the whole, I mean, even though I'm talking about small, like, punk rock projects and whatever, I did get stuck kind of in a hole of, like, what kind of work do I want to make? And you see people going viral and you see kind of things and you get kind of stuck in this kind of vortex. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of got shot out the other end of like, wait, this is against everything that I stand for. Like, you know, like looking at algorithms of like, what time should I post? Yeah. Is it? Like that.
Is, yeah.
That. And then I had to go back and look at things that I had written in 2004 that were just like, you know, craft is important and making is important and it's empowering. And then I look back on how it's changed my life And it's changed my life and given me so many opportunities. And I have never gone viral. Mm-hmm. And I'm cool with that. Mm-hmm. Like, I've heard that that's actually can be a very terrible experience for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And not for everybody, but I think that I started to realize that, like, you know, you have to do your own kind of thing and find your own people within that.
Yeah.
And that looks like a lot of different things.
Mm, absolutely.
And so I started thinking about connections over, over money, really.
Mm-hmm.
And that felt, once I started thinking about that, that felt a lot more authentic to who I am.
Yeah.
And so yeah, the projects that I'm kind of thinking about are kind of based on, yeah, just creating
mm-hmm.
things that, that are group projects and that are small,
yeah,
on purpose,
yeah,
instead of big, because I think that they both have meaning.
Mm, absolutely. So that leads me nicely into the your other project, the You Are So Very Beautiful project, which I just adore and love, and it just has captivated my interest. How did that come to be in existence? And I guess explain to listeners who don't actually know what it is, what it is exactly.
Sure. So that project started because I thought about Seraphim Lothian's For You Stranger project, which was Guerrilla Kindness, that was in my book, Craftivism, and where she made cupcakes, like fake cupcakes that she left for people to take around town. That was based on a project, I think it was in Melbourne, mm-hmm. of people leaving toys for people to find.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what could I do that was like that? And I was like, I can't think of anything. And then I was doing this thing called the 5-Minute Journal,
mm-hmm.
which, yep. I was taking the bus every day to work, going through DC, and which has a lot of really, you know, nice monuments and everything. And it says, like, what 3 things can you do to make your day better? Like, what are 3 things that happened that were good or whatever? And at the end, it said to, it had to, like, say an affirmation,
mm-hmm.
like, I am whatever. And I was the worst. I was like, I am nice. I am kind. I couldn't say any really good thing about myself. It was so hard. I would find myself just like watching traffic out the bus window because I just could not do it. And it was embarrassing. And then I realized that I remembered that, you know, if you are thinking that you're alone with something, and for me, this, you know, goes back to my own trauma of thinking that I'm the only one
mm-hmm.
that had ever, I mean, of course, that had ever been like hurt or assaulted. And that's a lie.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Unfortunately, it's happened to many people. Yeah. And, yeah. And you're thinking no one is going to want to hear my story, or I'm not worth it. We're thinking all these negative things.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and thinking that like I was like, well, maybe I could like stitch affirmations and leave them around. And because I'm not feeling great about myself, and I bet a lot of other people aren't feeling great about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started leaving affirmations around and posting them online, and it got recreated. Like Seraphim did a drop in Australia, and then it got recreated in parts of the US and in Canada and England and different places. And Faith Levine curated a show at the Fuller Craft Museum, and we got to collect a whole bunch, and they got to be shown on a wall, which was really great. And so it kind of took off of this little project from there. And just based on the fact that I thought that I was alone and thinking things,
mm-hmm.
and which was pretty great. Like, I was like, well, this is cool that people liked it. Yeah. And so I did workshops. I did a workshop
at the Knitting and Stitching Show in London. Mr. Extich, Jamie Chalmers, got some students from the Royal School of Needlework to help us. My friend O. Corcoran came over, and we did some stuff there. And that's one of the beautiful things about putting something online without kind of an idea of where it will go. Mm-hmm. Because then people liked it and were like, ooh, can we do this? Yeah. You know, and I'm still getting asked to talk about it like years later. Yeah. And so that was a really nice project of just creating something. And I went through different iterations of, I put the hashtag on some of these little hand stitch signs, that were palm size, you know, and then I put some out that didn't have the hashtag, just because I was like, there was a feeling of, am I putting this out because of the hashtag and I want people to find me and I want credit? Yep. Or am I putting this out because I want to share it with the world?
Yes. Yep.
And they were both different kind of things. And I did kind of have to, you know, like, because it's, I think with the internet, like, you think about, like, am I just sharing this because I want credit for sharing it? Or am I doing this because I think it's fun and needs to be shared? And if only 5 people like it, cool. If more are you, awesome. Like, and that you just, and so I think part of that is my social science background of, like, I'm fascinated at what happens when you, like craftivism, when you put out an idea and you don't know what's going to happen, or if it, because craftivism was just something that there were 4 hits on Google that somebody had written about. And then, like, I found out later that there was an even earlier article that I didn't even know existed that had mentioned the word craftivism. Mm-hmm. But I just was like, this is something that people need to talk about. Yeah. I'm going to write about it. I'm not going to really tell anybody anything. I'm just going to tell, like, my friends, some people on maybe a craft message board, and then we'll just see what happens, because that was the cool part.
Yep.
What happens when you do something and don't really say anything about it? Like, who finds you? Yep. And then eventually I got emails from people, like, halfway across the world that I couldn't trace back. Mm-hmm. To my friends or my knitting group or whatever. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, other people think this is a good idea. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
And so I guess, again, if I was a different kind of person, I could have monetized it. And who knows, I could be sitting on millions of, like, I don't know, all my craftivism money, like, yep. Scrooge McDuck, yep. Just like diving into, but nope, I have a punk, you know, DIY background. Yeah. I'm like, let's just put it out there for free and see what happens. And it's been amazing because I have made such amazing connections, and that has been worthwhile to me. It hasn't been millions. But to me, I was looking for connection and conversation.
Yeah.
And that was the driving force.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's priceless, really.
Yeah, I think so. I think that it's fun. because you're not worried about, like, is this advertiser going to drop me or whatever? Because there aren't any.
Yep. That's exactly right. You just do how you want to, not how someone over the head is saying it should be done.
Right. Yeah, and I'm not saying that that approach is wrong. I'm just saying that, like, it's not one that feels right for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a definitely trial and error, as I'm sure it was. It's been for you too.
Yeah, always.
And
always is trial and error. So I'm curious to know who, like, can you trace your influences in your craft?
Gosh, I think I owe a lot to, like, to people, like, there are a lot of 70s, like, female artists that I really identified with.
Mm-hmm.
That, of course, names who all escape, you
absolutely.
Know, that are now escaping me right now, the second,
because,
I think about, like, Carolyn Schneeman of, like, the Interior Scrolls, really, that was like, oh my gosh, that was mind blowing. Hopefully I'm saying her name right. Anna Mendiata, the, I don't know if you know, she did work with the Earth.
No.
And made these amazing pieces. And so people like that. And then I just really intrigued by people that were making as a form of kind of their own healing and connection. Mm-hmm. Surprise, surprise, because I've said those words a lot.
Yep.
but I was I found this book called Women in Craft that was written in the 70s, and it was about there's an essay in there by a woman named Faith Gillespie about how craft is an act of refusal,
mm-hmm.
to you know, towards like the mainstream or whatever. And I made a piece for a show and shared it on my blog. And then I got an email from like her daughters.
Oh, wow.
Saying like, yep, that's spot on. You got her, mom. Like, it was amazing. Wow. I was like, what? Yeah. Like, and so I think that that book was really important. And then you have a lot of quilts that were made in the South,
mm-hmm.
That were really important, like the G's Bend quilts. And you have these kind of pieces that are made as connection and family. And I just really loved the fact that people were just exploring with, you know, their own kind of interior landscape and in some ways in some work. And then in other works, like G's Bend, they were using what they had.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in that case, you know, they were using what they had because they didn't have, you know, easy geographic access to stores for a lot of money. And so they were making quilts out of their own old jeans and stuff like that. And I think that that just this kind of making as an everyday way of life on one hand, mm. and then making as a way of connection to yourself and others on the other hand. And they kind of overlap in some places. It's funny. There is, do you know who, you know Roland Barthes?
No, I don't.
He wrote Camera Lucida, which is one of my favorite books. And it's about photos and where they are important, mm-hmm. And like what like pricks you like from a photo, like what is the important, like what gets to you about that photo, yeah. and the emotional response of photography. And I love that book so much. And that was also a really important book of looking at how works grab us and how they make us feel,
mm.
and how, and I think that, and that also this whole idea of feeling and connection is something that has been a driving force in my own life, mm-hmm. because I was drawn to knitting because of the softness of the wool, and I didn't put it together until much later, but I was drawn to the softness of the wool because I could feel it,
mm-hmm.
because I had been attacked multiple times when I was younger. And so I had basically gone numb.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that I could feel this soft and like, you know, yarn and work with it and feel it and make something of a skein of yarn into something was an empowering act. And an act of safety because it felt safe and good. So I guess a lot of the people that I'm influenced by also think of making as a very life-changing kind of thing to connect to.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's always been a very beautiful thing to me to see how I connect to art and to creativity and to see how other people connect to it as well. So it's not just what I'm connecting to, it's how other people are connecting to making at large.
Do you have like brands or, you know, types of wool that you like to use? Like, is there favorites that you, do you find yourself going back to the same sorts of, you know, same suppliers, same over and over again? Because we do love talking about, like, here we are the Art Supply Posse, and the term is loosely applied here when we're talking about art supplies, but, you know, at the end of the day, you need wool, you need fiber, whatever, to make your things, so they count in my book. Mm-hmm. So are there favorites? Yeah. Are there things that you, you know, you buy from, you have a huge stash from one particular brand, or how does all that work for you?
I like Manas de Uruguay, which is a cooperative in Uruguay of women who make amazing yarn. It's always beautiful. Mm-hmm. And then I just got some yarn from Lady Dye Yarns, which is a, she is a U.S. dyer. And I got some really gorgeous bright yellow and bright pink.
Oh, wow.
Yarn. I'm not sure what I'm going to make with it. But I like picking up yarn when I'm traveling. Before the pandemic, I guess it was probably a year before the pandemic, I went to Iceland.
Oh, yeah.
And I was taken to a co-op whose name I've forgotten now by my friend Sigrun, who took us to this co-op that was full of like yarn that that people had spun and made there. And then also to Iceland's second largest yarn producer, which was a mini mill, which could fit in your average living room.
Wow.
And on a farm, and it was amazing. And I think it's called Upspinny. And so I bought some yarn from there. And so I have a lot of bits and bobs, mm-hmm. that I have collected. And so I haven't really relied on like one, you know, mm-hmm. particular yep. brand yep. Because the yarn is, I like being like drawn to like a certain color and being like, that's what I'm going to have.
Yeah.
And then, whereas other people I know are like, I need yarn in every color in case it strikes me. But yeah, so sorry, that's not a very good answer.
No, it's fine. But, it's your answer. This is the nice thing about it.
It is. It's my answer.
Exactly. That, there is no right or wrong. All right, I'm curious to know, because I'm going to hope that somebody listening, or many, many more than one person, one somebody, is inspired. Perhaps they want to learn textiles as an art form, or even more, they want to get into craftivism themselves. What should someone do?
Mm-hmm.
Who's, if you're someone's inspired, well, speak to that person that's inspired, hopefully.
Sure, I will. I feel like my answer is, I like my answer, but I feel like in the age of virality, my answer is people are kind of like, can you give me a better answer? But I will say that after doing this for 20 years, I still think it's the best answer I can give you.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll start with that. I say, if you want to make a piece or, because there are different ways that yeah. you can use, like, we'll go with like knitting. You can knit something and donate it
mm-hmm.
for a cause. For my podcast series, I just talked to the founder of Knit the Rainbow, which is a group in New York City, mm-hmm. That collects garments for LGBTQ plus youth and homeless youth in New York, and you know, gives them scarves and gloves, and is building out more resources. So they're actually hoping to eventually teach them to knit,
mm-hmm.
So they can kind of have moments together. So there, you can do something like that, and there are projects all over the world that you can make stuff and donate to. And for that, you would need to, if your craft is sewing, you can find a sewing charity that you can do that. You can make something for, you can, you know, if it's knitting, you can, any craft you have, you can find something that, you know, that it, that they need donations, yeah. which is pretty amazing. And you just can Google, you know, sewing, you know, donation, blanket donations mm-hmm. or whatever, or knitting mm-hmm. or whatever. And, but if you want to make up, you know, something like, let's see, you want to do something like yarn bombing. That's another thing you can do, which people have done for, to, you know, something that's like Black Lives Matter or which is, you know, kind of a, you know, an activist kind of cause, or maybe there have been cases where there have been like abandoned lots that people have put flowers up that they have made out of yarn. And so, those are other ways you can do it. And you can, and if you go onto Instagram and you look under the hashtag craftivism, mm-hmm. you'll see a lot of other examples.
Yeah.
And so basically it's basically about using your craft to do something toward the greater good. So if you need to look at what skills you either have or want to learn, and then where you want to put forth work, whether that's in an activist space towards a specific cause to raise awareness mm-hmm. for breast cancer or something else, or it could be, I mean, the problem is that with this answer is that it's huge. Yeah. Like there's so many different things you can do. And what I see the most in the past year as people want to do more activist work is they'll make something and they're like, hey, I made, you know, 10 embroidered hoops that of, you know, patterns mm-hmm. of, you know, like flowers or whatever. Yeah. They made their work. Yeah. And instead of selling it, they would donate a portion of the of the proceeds or all of it to a cause, because a lot of causes, you know, sometimes they do need donations like sweaters and, but a lot of causes need actual money, yeah. they, you know, need money too. And so that is another way that you can get involved. And I think that activism looks different for different people, mm-hmm. depending on your own lived experience. And sometimes it's just making something that calls awareness to something that you feel is unjust. Maybe that means it's telling your part of your own story that you haven't told before. I think activism is a very broad word and can be used in a lot of different ways. So can empowerment, if you're looking at craft as empowerment. Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes people are like, how can I get this project to go viral or whatever? But I think that also it's important to think about what you want the project to accomplish.
Yeah.
And usually having a project go viral is not but the best aim, because that's hard and that's usually short-lived. Mm-hmm. So if you want to raise money for a cause, then you may want to make some items and sell them and donate the proceeds. Or see if you can get people to match the money that you raise, you know, and then that becomes even more money. And something like You Are So Very Beautiful, was kind of like an activist empowerment kind of tangent of like, you know, about getting people to see their own worth.
Yeah.
And to see that they are beautiful and they are amazing. Some people have done, you know, craftivism things like taught people to knit or made scarves and left them in public. And when it's cold outside for people to find, mm-hmm. I mean, they're, it's kind of endless. Yeah. And so I feel like my answer is kind of it's not a very succinct answer, because there's a lot of different things that you can do. And so I think that what it kind of boils down to is what your skills are. And it could also be something you want to learn.
Yeah.
But what your skills are and what you're passionate about. And that's a great starting point.
Definitely. It's the perfect answer to me. I think it's perfect. So don't be worried about that.
Thank you. Thank you.
So is there anything else you want to talk about, Betsy? Have we covered everything, do you feel? I mean, I do kind of feel like we could actually, this conversation could go for another 3 hours and it would be gone in the blink of an eye. That's kind of how I feel, but I am not sure that the listeners want a 3-hour podcast, although, you know, we could split it. you know, there's always that. But is there anything else you want to talk about before I do close?
Sure. I'm going to say that that you can find me online on social media at Craftivista. If you have any questions and you want me to point out some projects and some starting points of where you could do some research on a Craftivist project or a specific type of work in this area, please get in touch. Mm-hmm. I am also still collecting stories of resilience and textiles for Dear Textiles, yep, and in both podcast and writing form, because that's still kind of in flux. And yeah, and if you want to hear more about any of my future projects, I have a newsletter that you can find. It's linked in my social media profiles, and you can find out more. And thank you, if you're still listening, for still listening. That's awesome. And I really appreciate it. And I'm very glad that my dog has stayed quiet for this whole hour, yes, because that rarely happens these days.
Oh, really? My two are sound asleep. Bless them. I'm like, oh, good. No one's snoring too loudly, so that's good.
Yes. And thank you, Kim, for contacting me and for allowing me this opportunity.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Betsy. Thank you so much again for joining us. We will have links in the show notes to all of you. It's the easiest thing for people to do is to click in their podcast player of choice and they can then go from there. But thank you once again.